Okay, we are calling this meeting to order, a special meeting of the Civil Service Commission of Bainbridge Island. And we have Kate Brown here, who is our Secretary Chief Examiner. And as commissioners, we have me, Bruce Weiland, Rob Killian, and Linda McMacken. We have Steve Lackage on the phone from afar, but he wanted to participate. And we also have Will Patton here, the city attorney. Today's meeting is a special meeting, so we're not going to do a broad agenda, just the items that are literally on the agenda, which primarily relate to the oral panels that we just completed yesterday and the day before. Mm-hmm. First order of business, however, is to ask the three, or actually four, commissioners present whether there are any conflicts of interest that have arisen since the last meeting that they would like to disclose, or whether they would like to report about any relevant between meeting communications. Rob, you want to start?
Sure. No conflicts of interest, only major intermeeting communications. Linda and I worked as a subcommittee on interviewing the oral board panelists, volunteers, earlier in the month, and then worked extensively with Kate over the last few days on the actual oral boards. That's about it.
Linda?
I have nothing to report.
And this is Bruce, and I have nothing to report other than I want to say that Rob, I want to thank Rob and Linda for doing the groundwork of picking the oral board volunteers, but particularly Rob has spent, I think you've been there for every minute of the oral panels process over the last 2 days, and it is great to have a member of the commission sit in on that, just kind of get the gestalt of it for us. So now we have both Kate and Rob who can report to us how the whole thing went. And I'd love, not officially, but I'd love us to try to make a habit of having one person mm-hmm. at least go to these things, and maybe one each day, but she would not be the same person.
I think that's a great idea to continue our education and our participation with the essential task.
Yep, I agree. So, with that, next item on the agenda is approval of the minutes from March 9th meeting.
If we have
a conflict. Oh, I'm sorry. Steve,
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, I have no conflicts, and I have nothing to report.
Okay, thanks, Steve. I'm sorry. I forgot you were sitting there in theory. Are you back next meeting, the April 13th?
No, I will not be.
Oh, okay. All right.
I'll be returning to the island on mid-May, and then I'll be there for the next probably 9 months. So.
Okay, great. And, if we're talking those subjects, I'm going to be gone for 2.5 weeks in June, so we probably ought to get in the habit of giving us all a little bit of warning. I don't think we need huge warning.
Right.
Okay. Now, moving on to the minutes for March 9th. Did we get those passed around already?
I didn't pass around hard copies today. I emailed them to everybody a couple weeks ago.
Do you have any copies now?
I have one copy. Sorry.
That's okay.
Normally I bring copies and nobody wants them, so I should have done that. I can go make copies.
Was
very
I at that meeting? I don't believe I was at that meeting.
Yes, you were. Yes.
Well, then I read the minutes and I didn't see any additions.
I mean,
okay.
I know I read them before and I had no problems with them.
Okay.
No, if I
see
wasn't any present at the meeting.
You weren't present. Okay,
right.
William was, right. And Steve, you were not present at the meeting.
Right.
I will always send any corrections or additions back to you when I get them.
Okay.
Yeah,
just
exactly.
To confirm, I think, Rob, you were there. This is the one where we decided that you and Linda would decide who the citizens were.
Is that on the 16th or the 9th?
The 9th. So we met on March 9th. That was the last meeting.
Okay. That's the last one. Yes, I was there.
Yeah.
It was the one before that.
That's right. February 24th.
I was thinking of the one before.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, since we've all gotten the minutes emailed to us previously, and like Linda, if I had any comments, I would have made them at that time.
Okay.
Do we have a motion to approve the minutes?
I so move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Minutes are approved unanimously. We have no members of the public visiting us, but as usual, I will relay via video or audio my plea for members to come and spend time with us. We're so lonely here. Please come if you want, but nobody comes. So,
I will say that I passed on to all the people that we interviewed that applied as volunteers to become oral panelists and the people that actually showed up to encourage them to continue in the process and come and join us for these meetings or future meetings.
Good, so good.
Hopefully we'll get some turnout because there are some great bodies of knowledge there that all of those people have that we could benefit from.
I suppose on Bainbridge Island, if nobody's coming to complain, we should be considered lucky. So, but we're doing our best. Okay, moving on. Our next item is a report by Kate with regard to the oral interview results. And let me just say right up front that we want to keep as much as on the public record as we can, but if in the process here we start seeing names, mm-hmm. we may jump into an executive session for a few minutes so that we can discuss something vis-a-vis that, but then we'll jump back out, and let's just try to keep our eyes on that concept.
And is it fair to say that even if we're not, you know, discussing names, that that can still happen? Because the information that I've provided doesn't necessarily have candidates' names on it, but we may want to discuss aspects of that candidate's score, or does it have to be a named individual?
No, it's an applicant for public employment.
Okay.
Allows you to go into executive session.
Right. Okay. Fine. I just wasn't sure if we needed to make that distinction.
Okay.
So I will be very upfront with you and say that I don't have any formal report because I have had no time to do that in the last 24 hours. I literally thought I was going to have much more time today to sort of pull everything together. I did all the rankings yesterday, but there were a lot of loose ends that Rob and I talked about. So I apologize. I don't have a formal report for you.
That's
but
okay.
I drafted everything up until Wednesday, what happened in the process mm-hmm. of how we got to Wednesday, and I can easily finish that off and then circulate it to the commissioners.
Let me just say one thing about the documentation issue, and you know I'm anal about that. I think it's important that we have two levels of documentation. One level is just sort of like minutes of what has happened mm-hmm. as we've gone through this process for the first time at the new commission, mm-hmm. just so that when 6 months from now when someone has a question about, well, what did you do here, we have a really detailed record that says what we did. And then as you write that specific sort of report of the event, I'd like you to pull out the items that you think are going to go in the instruction manual, the operating manual, the whatever we call it, because I wanted to keep our eye on that ball, because that's the only way you keep institutional memory.
Yeah.
So those products can, and I'm thinking you're going to be sort of contributing to that and crafting it over time, and it may not come to us for 9 months, but the point is mm-hmm. I want us to end the year hopefully with some kind of manual that really says what we've learned about processes, so we don't have to 2 years from now, someone has to reinvent the wheel every time.
Well, both the processes and the policy.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah.
Because I think that one of the things that happens in a lot of entities mm-hmm. is that they make policy and make process, and like you said, Bruce, that gets forgotten, you know, and then new people come on board and they're scratching their heads figuring it out all over again.
Yeah.
And then the public gets really confused.
You know, and as you are gathering these notes of conclusions that you've made about good process and good policy, you know, whatever form, right now it may just be a collection of running stream of consciousness, but eventually we'll want to talk about the form in mm-hmm. which this operating manual, whatever we call it, looks like,
yeah.
and, you know, so that's sort of a ongoing
yeah.
thing.
And throughout this, I have come across situations where I say, well, we either need to amend the rules, we need something in the rules that talks about this, so,
right.
and that's a real policy process distinction to me. So if I find those, I sort of set them aside, and then I plan to bring them to your attention for you to discuss.
Yeah, I mean, I also have a growing list of things where the rules need to be amended, and we just kind of keep
mm-hmm.
adding to those lists, and we'll get there, you know, eventually.
Well, and one of the things is, you know, if somebody can participate and make a quorum.
There's one example right there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, sorry.
All right,
go ahead.
So for the report, I'm just going to sort of walk through what we did, and I guess I will wait to hand these out, but we interviewed five entry-level applicants. Please, Rob, will you interrupt
yep.
and add to this as I go, because
sure.
you took notes, and I really appreciate you doing that. We interviewed five entry-level applicants on Wednesday, March 28th. We had originally scheduled six, and I believe I went down the list many times trying to fill that vacancy, and I just wasn't able to get somebody, even up to the day before, which I think is almost ridiculous to ask somebody to prepare one day before.
Mm-hmm.
So we had five interviews. It unfortunately meant that there was a two-hour lunch break, which I felt bad about, but that's just the way it was, so we couldn't really do anything about that. And we had a four-member panel on both days. The representative from the Bainbridge Police Department and the representative from another agency were the same on both days. The citizen representatives were different on each day. On Thursday, March 29th, we interviewed four lateral applicants. Again, we had a originally 5 people apply, but the day before, one of them withdrew because he was entering in the background process with another agency, so didn't want to waste anyone's time. And overall, you know, I think we're going to talk about the process later on, so I won't get into the details of that, but I think for now I should probably circulate the scores so we can go through those page by page. There we go. And Steve, I will email this to you after the fact. I'm sorry, it was up until the very last minute right before the meeting that I was updating you. Okay, so if we do the, if we look at the entry level applicants first, there's 2 pages. The first one is the legal size spreadsheet. And this is a document I modeled after a sample eligibility list that's in the public safety testing user's guide. So I used their column headings and created this document. The idea with this is that it's a continuous eligibility list. So in however many months when we have our next round of interviews, I will then be slotting in those people based on their scores. So that's why there's, you know, it looks like there's some duplicative information with the expiration date, but eventually there will be different dates in those fields based on when people are interviewed. So the reason I'm showing you this, well, I think it's useful to have this because every time you certify new names that and we add the names to this, I will bring this back to you. But also, I wanted to just identify that one of the applicants did not pass the oral, so was disqualified. And you'll see that there are no names on here. I just assigned random numbers as identifiers for each applicant. So included the information by panelists as in terms of the scores assigned to each applicant. And then took that raw average. The issue that we will probably want to resolve for the next time is, we've talked about this, that we want to have 10 questions instead of 9 questions. It just makes the math a little bit easier. No. It wasn't that difficult. It was more just, you know, something that I wish I thought of sooner. So.
What's the difference between oral, raw average, and oral score?
So the raw average is literally the average of those scores. So the maximum possible score a candidate could have achieved was a 90 because there were only 9 questions and 10 being the highest score per question.
Oh, I see.
So
okay.
I wouldn't have had to do that if we had 10 questions.
I get it.
So it's just an extra step. And when I get to the point where we're publishing this information, I will probably not include the individual panelist scores and then the raw average. It's just a little bit messy, and I think it's a little more confusing.
So the oral score is just you turn that raw score into a percentage.
Right. Okay. Yep. And then the weighting, I take that percentage multiplied by 60% because the oral score is worth 60% of the, you know, the total score is based on 40% written and 60% oral. Then the written score is there. That's literally the percentage that they got on their PST written test. And then I multiply that by 40%. Then I come up with the total. After that is the veterans preference points column. Mm-hmm. We had, as you can see, we had one entry-level applicant who requested veterans preference points, and I can talk a little bit more about this later, but just to say that there was a little bit of confusion mm-hmm. about how that applies, and I guess the commission can decide how much they would like me to double-check or confirm that information with the applicant. They have to check a box on the application mm-hmm. form, and 2 of the people that we have here either didn't understand or didn't check the box, but could have. So I followed up with them today and modified those based on that information, and then I will, you know, confirm that in writing with them. But this person is claiming 10%, so I added in 10% of his total score, and that's how we came up with the rank total. And according to the rules, that number is supposed to be a whole number. It's supposed to be rounded. So that is how we came to that calculation.
Okay. maybe we should start and just ask if we have any questions about this mm-hmm. spreadsheet and whether there's any suggestions we would have for clarifications or
mm-hmm.
changes.
Yep.
Robert, Linda, any comments?
Well, I'd be interested, Rob, in how you think this reflects the experience.
So when I went through the data and thinking back about the interviews, what I tried to do was just make sure that the data was at least as far as it could be unbiased, that there was no
mm-hmm.
giant red flags
mm-hmm.
In there. And I came across a couple that seemed, there were some, at least statistically, some kind of visceral differences in certain
mm-hmm.
scores, and there was some huge variability
mm-hmm.
in there and stuff. But overall, at the end of the day, even if you were to remove those oddballs, the top three candidates were still the top three candidates.
Okay.
And things. But no, I think when I looked at the way the board ran, and I asked them very specifically when in the pre-brief and as we went through in the discussion, I think all of the panelists were objective in their questioning and their evaluation of the candidates.
Okay.
So, but I think each, and I think what we do and what we do need and what we ask for in all four of those is that each of them make sure that they're doing that in an objective way. They don't have any preconceived notions when they're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they did, but some are harder graders than others. Somebody's average is a 5, and another person's average is a 7.
I think it's a particularly good reason why it's important to have, in addition to Kate overseeing the process, to have one of us, or even two of us,
mm-hmm.
trying to attend those things as well, not to be active participants and not to affect the outcome, but to kind of take a reading as to there's any aberrations in the process, and because we've got to be on the lookout of something that rises to the level of, you know, sort of a violation of due process, I would think. But I also think that one of the things that's great about oral exams is they build in the subjective element. That's why everything isn't written, because you're trying to tap into the community and into the professionals' gut sense, and so it's okay that there's variations in scores because that reflects human interactions, and that's one of the things we're trying to get a read on. So, So I think both keeping an eye out and also accepting those variations is part of the process.
And I think it just also goes back to that different oral board members are looking for different traits and qualities. The officers, the police officers that sit on the board are looking for certain traits that the civilian members are not, and vice versa. So I think it kind of is able to model a lot of the different things that the community is looking for, as well as the police.
Well, and from these scores, it looks like, the panelists thought about it. I mean, because there's enough variety here in the scores that were given, you know, people were making distinctions and coming up with conclusions. And so this feels pretty good to me.
Good.
Okay.
I have just one
mm-hmm.
suggestion, a minor. In your category 4, it says total.
Mm-hmm.
Let's add the word weighted in that heading.
Okay.
Just so that we know it's the total of the weighted.
Yep. Okay.
And I guess because that little writing sample is kind of it's nothing but a bit of information. It's
mm-hmm.
not a pass. It's not a fail. I guess it doesn't show up on here.
No.
Okay.
And I indicated that on the sheets themselves which they completed. Let me just find it real quick, because the language I used was, there it is. This information will not be scored as part of the oral interview process, but will be provided to the chief for his review should you progress further in the hiring process.
Did everybody respond? How did they all respond to the written sample thing? Anybody panic?
No, a couple people. Oh, no, penmanship. but no, I mean, I think they all did a good job. I think it was interesting also because the question that they needed to respond to in the writing sample was very similar to the first interview question. And I think that was probably good because they just written it all out. And so a lot of them had, I felt, very structured, good openings in that.
And maybe it's a reasonable thing to put them at ease before you get to the tougher questions.
Yeah.
I think that's a great idea because we want people to perform at their very best. And it is, you know, by definition, an awkward, stressful situation.
Yeah.
So good job. This is a lot of work.
It
Kate, I don't know how you did all
this. It feels like a short list. I wish there were, we'll get there. We'll get there. We'll fill it up, I know.
And then as far as applying the veterans preference point percentage, instead of just adding a solid 10 to it or
right.
a 5 round number, you're, is the PST, is that how they're doing it? They're just applying a percentage against that weighted total, and then those are the points that are added instead of just a solid 10 or a solid 5.
Right. So even the RCW says, by adding to the passing mark, grade, or rating only, based upon a possible rating of 100 points as perfect a percentage. So I went and compared to, you know, double-checked on the PST example, and it is literally the subtotal or the total times 10%.
Okay, so it's a percentage bonus, not
yeah.
a point bonus.
Correct,
okay.
yeah.
But you're saying it should have been rounded up in this case to 8 to 9?
No.
The rank total is rounded
right.
to the even number.
The,
oh, I see.
Yeah,
the veteran's preference stays a percent as
right.
a factor. Okay.
Right. Yeah, there's nothing, I guess there's nothing about the rounding. But yeah, it's a percentage of the total score, not a flat number, 10 or 5. So taking this then, I turned that into, well, I created this additional document, this Word document, because I was explaining to Bruce that every time we do the interviews, I will do one of these separate documents that shows these are the people who interviewed and these are the people who are eligible based on their total scores. But this document will still continue to be updated, but will include lots of different time periods. So I wanted to make sure there was a distinct document that shows
what
happened.
Well, this is a working document,
right.
and this is to certify to be put with the minutes that
right.
are formal.
Right.
Right.
So this reflects each individual edition,
mm-hmm.
and this reflects the compilation of all editions.
Right.
I think it's a great structure.
Quick question, the ID number doesn't
mm-hmm.
have to be the last four digits. There's
no.
Okay.
I actually used a
random
number generator. Yeah.
Because awesome.
I thought, I don't want to make this up. I have no idea. So yeah, I just went on the website, out on the internet. So I copied, you know, language in previous documents that I found in the files, and hopefully this works for a way of the commission certifying the register. So I added everybody's names here, which I will do, I think, on every time, and then if certain commissioners are not present, I'll just say, not. I'll just write not present. And then the members who are here, I think, should sign one copy of it, and then I will include it in the files.
And we should probably have a date on this, the date that it's signed?
Yeah, so the date certified, that's what that date there is supposed to, in the table, that is the date, that's what that date is supposed to indicate.
Oh, okay.
So technically, I mean, I'm assuming you're going to certify it, but
okay.
if you
So you'll always have that, the date of the meeting?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then I presume you're going to want to, you know, move to accept that, and then it will be reflected in the motions and in the minutes, and it will be part of the record in that way also.
Just give me 1 second to read through.
Sure.
I'd like to add in front of where applicable that we certify this, blah, 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 as presented to us by the Secretary Chief Examiner. Because what we're doing is we're certifying information that you've given to
mm-hmm.
us. We haven't gone back and looked at the raw data.
Well, and that actually was going to be my next question, which is, maybe Will has an opinion on this. What is our charge in terms of double-checking the raw data? Not because we don't trust your
yeah.
work, but do we have some kind of legal obligation to deputize one commissioner to double-check so there's a second set of eyes looking at the raw data?
I don't believe we do.
It doesn't feel necessary to me. I just put the thought on the table.
I think that one of the reasons that Kate has the job that she does, now if Kate came to a meeting drunk, or if she wasn't able to, that was a joke for people listening, or if she wasn't able to explain this, then that would alert us perhaps to a further duty. But, you know, you're presenting this very well, you're very knowledgeable, and I don't think that it would be appropriate for us to go to that level of minutia.
I'm very comfortable with that. I mean, these, I think to get to this point, these are all, I guess, what they would call ministerial. As difficult as it was to pull all the pieces together, I think they'd be called ministerial actions that we are authorized to allocate or to delegate down to.
Other than the math, Kate didn't generate any of these numbers.
Yeah.
Right. No, I as well, I'm very comfortable with the data that supports these numbers behind there. And the thought I had of a change before, I found where it is on the form, and I'm good to go with that. And the other thing is, if there is ever an issue, the original raw score sheets are always available to the public to come in.
Oh, I can't believe the amount of information you're going to have to. And I will email to you my suggestion for inserting.
Okay.
So you don't have to keep that in your brain right now.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting because looking back, the secretary always signed the register also. And so I just added my name on there just because of that. But I'm not sure if that's necessary. If I should say something like prepared by, or I don't know what distinction we might want there.
Yeah, I don't feel strongly about that. I like to have you sign. I like to know who's. I think it's a good idea. I'm feeling like we should just have a little date next to each signature.
Okay.
Just because it's possible that someone might sign it after the fact.
Right.
You know.
That's my other question is, you know, Steve and William, they're not here, so do we need their signatures? Technically, I don't think we do because there's a quorum present, and if you approve it, then it's approved. But if we want to make changes to this document, can they still move to approve the names today so that I can notify the candidates on Monday, even
I
if it hasn't been signed?
We'll chime in if you have an opinion, but I think we approve this as we do anything a commission does by a quorum.
Mm-hmm.
I think you just, I like your idea of simply writing not present,
mm-hmm.
you know. I think we can approve the content of this even though she's going to tweak the form a little bit and we'll
mm-hmm.
probably end up signing it next meeting.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we can approve the content here as a motion if we're ready.
Okay.
Here's, I don't know, Rob, if you had any changes, but here's the wording changes. That
just a question regarding the dates, the effective dates.
Mm-hmm.
So you talk about eligibility remains valid for, you know, 1 year from the effective date of the examination result.
Yeah.
Examination of oral board, examination of written.
Yeah, I changed that to say date. I changed it to say that the date the committee results, the examination results are certified.
Yeah.
I would make it today's date. Do you all agree
with
that?
1 year today, the date we certified.
So I took out the words effective and I put are certified.
And there's not an issue if the written scores that are valid for a certain period of time from PST standpoint expire before the end of this our eligibility list.
Correct. That is not an issue because once we've brought them into our process, that date doesn't matter anymore.
That's just a PST internal requirement that would ask them to retest.
Yes. And I'm glad that I just looked this up because I was going to say, oh, well, rule 10.5, I took the language right out of the rule, but interestingly, it's actually rule 9.1.6 that talks about the duration of eligible registers, and that's where it says, the applicant's name on an eligible register shall be maintained for 1 year from the date of promulgation.
Promulgation?
Yeah. So 10.5 talks about certification. And this is another area where I think that we're going to need to want to, you know, look at because there's two uses of the word certify in the rules. There's one where you're certifying the eligible register, and then when the chief asks for the top three names, then those names are certified to the chief. But from what I gather, it seems like there isn't necessarily a need to come back to the commission when that happens. It's sort of my job to keep track of the list, and as those three names get forwarded, then I document that, and I'll update you as the eligible, as this master list gets updated. So it's a little confusing.
There's also a typo in that sentence. It's
yes, there is.
On year
yes.
instead of 1 year.
I have that one highlighted.
I think the thing to remember so that we don't go crazy with process and minutia is our job is to make sure that good candidates are provided to the chief and that they are fairly evaluated and that it's a process that makes sense. And because I think that with some of the stuff, if you start looking at the small stuff instead of the big stuff, you can just lose track of what you're doing. And so we want to make sure that it's an honest process, that it's a fair process, and that it gives us the very best pool of applicants for the chief. And anything that we do that makes that happen is appropriate. And so that's just my two cents to keep us from going crazy.
I agree.
All right, I will make those changes. I will amend the rule reference. I'll do all that, and then I'll bring that. I'll bring one, a copy.
Okay.
I'll email it to you just so you can see it, and I'll bring a copy for a signature at the next meeting.
And I have been maintaining sort of a rough draft of changes to the rules as we go through these things. And so I've just written that one down.
Right.
And, you know, at some point we'll gather all these together and we'll start working on that.
Yeah. Do you want to keep that, or I mean, you gave me the one with your notes on it. Do you want a copy for any reason?
Sure.
Okay. Should we move on to the lateral? Then,
do we need a motion to approve this before we move on?
We could do a motion for each, I suppose. It probably couldn't hurt.
Well, just in case we get bogged down with the other one.
All right, go ahead.
I move that we approve this list and forward it on to the chief.
The entry level.
The entry level.
Police officer, eligible register.
Seconded.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Steve, chime in if you've got anything. We don't want to rush over you here.
No, I'm listening. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, as I understand, I don't vote.
That's my understanding, too, until we change the rules if we choose to. Okay, so we have now approved our first eligible register on the entry-level police officer.
Yay.
We congratulate ourselves.
Yay.
We're not quite incompetent, but all right, moving on.
That's pretty
it's
good.
Still
this
March.
Is the first quarter.
Yeah,
there we go.
And
there
we are a new commission, and
I
for
think
us
so.
To... And Kate, this is all new for you.
Yeah,
as well.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, your learning curve must be as vertical as ours.
Yes, I would.
You know, and
so.
One thing I wanted to add, I got an email from our former Secretary Chief Examiner Kim Hendrickson, who was one of our oral panelists, and she specifically had complimentary things to say about the process, about Kate's leadership in the process.
Oh, very good.
And she says the commission she feels is doing a great job, and it's nice to hear that, particularly from someone in the community who's had some experiences with this process. So I think we're on a good start.
Very good. That's nice of her to share that with us. Moving on to laterals.
Okay, so laterals, I said we had four applicants. One was disqualified because the oral score was not above the passing mark of 70, so the other three are on there. Nothing too different than the other list. Again, another applicant with veterans preference points to be calculated in. And that's all I have to say about that.
Okay, any questions or comments about what we've got here? It's interesting, these scores are more consistent.
Yeah, I was going to say that these applicants were probably more comfortable with the process and more uniform, no pun intended, in their responses.
Okay, and that relates then to a lateral register.
Yep. So I will make the same changes to this document. And, of course, you know, with only three names, then I will be sending all three of those names to the chief, and then we could be back to, you know, who knows how fast we'll go through those names, but we will hopefully have more at some point.
Well, and maybe now's not the time, but one thing we've got to talk about is when do we do this again, because our goal has been to have up to, 10 names on each list, so we probably shouldn't rest on our laurels too long.
How long will it take to get another pool of applicants?
Well, laterals, I think, will take a while. Entry, you know, I've got 60-something people on there, so not long.
I mean, one approach is to wait till the next test group comes in, because if some extra high scores come in, we want to...
Right, and that's what we did this time.
Yeah.
Actually, we had a couple rounds of testing with PFT, and at least one or two of those people who just took the test in March were included in our group here.
Right, so there's an advantage to wait to the next test and pick up some fresh candidates if they might be particularly high.
So we still need to find the police chief has one position to fill?
Two.
Two, okay. So if we have And I know there's a preference for the lateral, and so I guess I'd want to hear from the chief on whether or not he wanted to have more entry-level applicants to pick and choose from, since that seems to be the pool that's more available to
us. Well, and that's actually sort of tentatively, or at least an opening salvo, is on our agenda for the next meeting, to talk about lateral versus entry. And I think his preference right now is to hopefully to interview just the laterals. And now that we've actually got somebody on the list, I hope he's going to jump on it quick.
Yeah, I don't know. The last couple conversations, I don't want to speak for him, but I think, you know, when we talked about comparing the costs, and he's asked somebody on his staff to do some analysis there, so he has that information. But I think that he would definitely, you know, want to talk with the commission about whether or not he's in a position to consider an entry level budget-wise. So I don't think he's completely closed the door, but I don't want to speak for him, so I'll wait.
How expensive is the academy?
It's pretty expensive. I didn't bring it downstairs with me, but it's around $3,800 to send someone to the basic academy, but that's very likely to go up quite significantly based on the state funding. But the other part of that is that you pay the person's salary and benefits
right.
the whole time.
And
so.
It's like, what, 4 months or something before
yeah,
they
it's
actually
six
get
months
to,
or, yeah,
to
it's
the job.
It's
so
a long time.
That compensation is a big item. But I suspect that the decision as to whether to go lateral or entry level is going to be a moving target. If he
yeah.
interviews some laterals right. and he continues to have vacancies because he can't fill them, then he may want to go to the entry levels. I mean, they're both viable.
Mm-hmm.
So, but why don't we talk about the next agenda when mm-hmm. we get toward the end of the meeting?
And just from a scoring standpoint, from looking at the two pools of candidates together, it's actually the entry level list. Even though you can't compare apples to oranges necessarily between the entry and the oral, they both took the exact same written test, and the written tests are actually higher in many cases on the entry-level list versus the lateral list, and the oral board performance is actually higher on the entry-level candidates than the lateral candidates in a lot of cases.
Mm-hmm.
The anomaly is that one of the disqualifying candidates actually had the highest written score, so there are some quite a bit of variability in the process. I guess my fear is that not even giving the entry-level candidates an opportunity to interview if the door's already been closed on them, if they only want lateral applicants, or if he only wants to hire lateral applicants, then you're not even giving the entry-level an opportunity to show that they perform very well on the exam process.
Yeah. Well, and if that attitude becomes fixed in stone, then we're never going to get the entry-levels applying. I mean, why would they? No one ever interviews. So I think we need to keep vibrant in terms of age differences as well as experience differences.
And we'll talk about it more, but we actually got some great feedback from Paulsboro PD, one of our interview panel members, that they often hire one-on-one. They'll hire an entry and a lateral to have that mix of experience and longevity stuff. So issues that we can bring
There's
in.
A lot of strategy to this, isn't there?
Yeah.
A lot of planning.
All right. Any other comments, Kate?
No, nope, that's
take,
it.
Have a motion to approve the lateral register.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. We are now set for two.
Great. Thank you very much.
I'm just going to give you this stuff back.
Sure. So to just give you an idea of next steps, I will be contacting the applicants next week to let them know their scores, where they rank, let them know their secret ID number. And then I will post a limited amount of this information on the website, so that not very many cities do that. Actually, I had trouble, I think, even finding any that do. But it seems like a good way of keeping the applicants informed, so they don't necessarily have to contact me to find out if they've bumped up the list.
Mm-hmm.
So we can try that, and if the commission has any issues, or
so you're gonna. And tell everybody what their scores were, and then you're going to post on the website the scores that were selected?
Yeah, the overall scores, not necessarily the panelists
gave
you a pitch. Right, right.
Just the final ranking score.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That feels all right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all public knowledge.
Yeah.
Anybody could access it without a name attached to it, I guess, right?
I think so.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
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 So
talk about tonight's meeting, so I can.
Yes. Sorry.
Are you here for just that reason? Oh, I apologize. You were having so much fun, I thought you'd want to sit down.
Well, this is fun, too.
Right.
What are you going to talk about, Will?
Well, there was a question about tonight's meeting that Kim Hendrickson organized at the library.
Oh, uh-huh.
The community policing meeting.
As to whether somebody from the commission could go there, or three or four of you went there, what would be the issues. And it's not really an issue under the statute citations 4230.07L. It allows people who are members of a board or a council to be at another place or travel together to a meeting at a different site, as long as you don't take any action. Remember, action is discussion.
Right.
Can be action.
So we can observe.
You can observe. You can even talk at the meeting, as long as you don't talk to one another or through. If it turns out that you're kind of discussing commission agendas through asking a question of the panel,
mm-hmm.
and another person responding to that question, so
mm-hmm.
kind of a triangle discussion. I mean, that would potentially be a problem, but I can't imagine in tonight's forum, even if all five of you were there,
mm-hmm.
that if you weren't discussing the issues with one another, that it would be a violation of the open public meeting.
But of course, two people could go and
discuss
talk,
anything
talk anything they want. There's no limitations on something less than
once
a quorum.
Once you get a quorum.
Once you get to three, then suddenly you can't even engage in indirect something that might be deliberative.
So we're just going to have two people there, so we'll be good. What time does that meeting start?
5. It goes 5 to 6:30.
Which is, again, a major advantage of changing this from a three-member commission to a five-member commission.
Mm-hmm.
The three-member commission, you can't do anything except an open public meeting. And the statute that set up civil service commissions in 1937, of course, preceded mm-hmm. the open public meeting.
Right.
So there are none. In Washington, there are any number of agencies that are set up with a three-member commission,
mm-hmm.
which is very, very difficult when you have this open public meeting act requirement. It's like the PUD has three commissioners, the county has three commissioners. It's just a vestige of the old style.
Mm-hmm.
But it makes it very, very difficult for elected officials to do anything.
To build up those
yeah.
relationships
right.
they need
right.
to in order to govern.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you
much. Thank
you,
Will.
Speak up sooner. Next time we
won't have
making.
Right.
Thank
appreciate
you.
Appreciate your time, sir.
Okay. Now it was kind of artificial the way we divided this up, but
mm-hmm.
the next thing on the agenda was you did the reported. We approved the registers. Now we were going to talk about the process and the procedure.
Right.
And not so much any one particular candidate, but just simply what worked, what didn't work,
mm-hmm.
what did we learn? And Rob, having attended along with Kate, are probably the ones who can
advise. And Kate, did you conduct this? Did you welcome and convene and
yes.
introduce and
yes.
make sure things stayed timely? So you were the...
I think I tried to do that.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and that was the one area that I wasn't too sure about because in reading the notes, it was clear that one of the members of the panel was acting as the chair of the panel, which makes sense because I don't want to be talking to them about questions or anything. I want that all to be the people who are
actually
evaluating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there was, I guess in hindsight, next time I would probably have just a quick conversation with that person ahead of time and say, this is what I'm going to do, and then I will hand it over to you. I did that, but it was very brief, and I'd probably put a little more thought into that next time. But what I did do is make sure that at least with the laterals, because this is good feedback that Rob gave me that morning, is make sure that they all knew that these people don't know anything about you, they haven't seen your application, you know, they
mm-hmm.
feel free to share whatever you'd like in responding to the questions in terms of your background or experience. I let them know who was on the panel. And
did you have a cheat sheet so that you were giving the same information?
Yeah, it was very short, so I just sort of got it in my head.
And you did have a talking point sheet that you showed me before, and
yes.
presumably now you're going to amend that to beef it up a little bit and include what things you now know should have been
right.
there.
In terms of orienting the panel, I went through a spiel with them in the morning and just talked about, you know, here's what's going to happen. We're going to we want the questions to be asked the same way to each person. Here's what you can't ask about, and then here's how you score. So a very brief overview. And then I did just a really short introduction with the applicants themselves outside of the room. But next time I might do a little bit more of that in the room.
Was the phone here?
It was, yeah.
And so the applicants couldn't hear the
people? No, yeah, you can't hear. They were sitting way over on the other side of the room at that table doing their writing sample.
And did anybody from the public attend?
No.
Okay.
Would they have been allowed to?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. Yeah, and that was actually my thought of why I backed off on having that other additional candidate, the senior, come in as a potential observer, just to preserve the integrity of the questions, to make sure that the questions that were asked to the applicants should not be passed on to another potential applicant that may apply in the future, of the types of questions that we would be asking in the format of that, that should be an original experience for every potential applicant.
Yeah.
So it's the oral panelists, any member of the commission that wants to attend, and then that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a closed.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, we gave each applicant, the questions. I gave them all 10 minutes exactly before the interview to have the questions in front of them. I guess somebody could have, if they really wanted to, written them all down in their book. But I imagine that you're spending that time preparing for the interview and not copying the questions.
And I will say that all in, except maybe one case, I thought that giving them the questions ahead of time, just a few minutes ahead of time, made the process run a little smoother. It allowed them to reduce their stress level and give themselves talking points as they address that. There was one situation that we had that applicant seemed to read ahead a little bit. Oh, yes, well, as referencing question number 4, and they're only on question number 1 yet.
No.
So I think that's on a case-by-case basis then, and that's more of a leadership thing of the panelists, the chair of the panel, just making sure that they're staying on topic and only addressing one at a time. And they can use it as a reference point to read along on, particularly some of those long, involved scenario-based questions and things like that, to make sure they're hitting all the topics. And I think for almost all the candidates, it worked very, very effectively and very
useful.
Some of the things that I might add, and I think Kate did a great job keeping us all organized in intro, but I think a little bit longer intro with the panelists ahead of time. We had some issues with people being late, so everybody was not starting at the exact same time, and that was just a matter of time. I thought when the time of the day that we started, we thought we could all be there. So in the future, maybe making sure everybody's there so everybody gets the exact same amount of briefing on HR requirements and forbidden topics that you can't address or question and those kind of things. And I've got a whole notebook full of notes on new question types, suggestions, scoring matrix, adding in skills, knowledge, and abilities and things like that, that I'm going to come back later. I want to digest a little bit more and have some more suggestions of it.
Can you possibly reduce that to a sort of a memo that you can send around to all of us?
Yes.
Particularly to Kate? So
Yeah, absolutely. And I think other things that we as a commission want to think about, and some of the feedback that we got from a lot of the panelists were guidances and scoring, I think, was a particular topic that a lot of folks had the ability, it's a question and a scale of 1 to 10. Well, are they basing that on a certain set of topics? Is it moral fortitude for this question and ability to deal with conflict on this question, and give them a little bit more guidance on what's a number 10 answer versus a number 1 answer.
I think that makes a lot of sense.
Almost, if there's a list, was it the HR guy or was it the captain guy? I forget which one was talking about actually giving example answers.
Yeah, I think was it both of them? They each had a similar.
And it was almost a checklist that we created as a commission with input from the police department and the citizens too, if you want to. Okay, here's question number 4.
This is what we're looking for.
And here are 10 things that we would, that the most ideal candidate we could ever dream of would hit on in a particular answer. It was almost a checkbox system that, okay, if they mention community policing, they get 1 point. If they mention problems, so whatever it may be, and that can be different.
That sounds good to
me. The way... What it allowed them to do was at least think about what we would believe would be in an ideal candidate. Not that you want to make it so rigid that those are the only possible answers, but give the panelists at least ideas of what we're looking for in the answers to that case.
Here's my reaction to that without a whole lot of thought, but just off the cuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important to let them know what are the sort of principles and the high points or hot points that we would like to see addressed. You know, as you said at one point, moral fortitude, you know, quick, good decision-making, creative problem-solving. I'd like to give them those kind of general areas. I don't want to suggest to them that here's five key words, and if you check those off, you get a 10. And then we could just do the whole thing with a voice recognition computer. We wouldn't even need a person. So I like the idea of the subjectivity and the human judgment being involved. So I'm proposing...
Not to limit that, but just that use it as guidelines to just kind of guide their thinking on what they're looking for in a candidate. And at the beginning, Kate did just that. It was a form, and we went over we went over that list of 10 or 15 adjectives and verbs.
But not tied to any one question.
Not tied to any one question that we would like to see you evaluate in the answering of this. And that was the overall guidance for the whole interview. But a couple of the panelists particularly just wanted a little bit more information to be able to make that single.
And so what I would suggest is that instead of creating keywords, you take of those 15 comprehensive personality traits and skills are what we're looking for, you might reference 1, 6, and 5 as particularly valuable in question A, and 3 to 9 and 10 as important in question B. As a way to help them see what the question intent of the question is. But, you know, again, we can talk. We obviously can do a lot more talking.
And that was one of the things that I think Rich was talking about. He was had a huge background in HR development as far as creating knowledge, skills, and assessments of creating job descriptions of things, and at least guiding them in making sure that those 10 or 15 things that you're looking for overall in candidate are fairly evaluated in your. So if you identify these 10 things that you want in a candidate as far as descriptors of an ideal candidate, making sure that they are all fairly evaluated throughout your whole
interview. So use those items to decide whether your questions are appropriately covering the waterfront.
Yes.
I think it's a great idea.
Exactly. And then the other thing I think particularly to get to the 10th question is making it more of an open-ended, it's not a single question. It's an overall evaluation of the candidate. They could be the last score. That you give the candidate their introduction, that tell us a little bit about yourself and why you're here and what brought you to this point. Then you ask, say, 9 questions that we create, that we put forward. And then the 10th question is really their closing ceremony. That is there anything else you want to share with us? Do you have any questions of us?
Do you feel like you've been fairly evaluated in this process? I mean, I'd love to have that so that if we missed something and they felt that they could
that they can ask any questions of us. And I think it's the 10th question that isn't a specific question for them is just the final opportunity for the panelists that equally evaluated. It's not worth any more than any of the other 9 questions. It's just on a scale of 1 to 10, where would you place this candidate based on the overall experience that you've had with them for the past 45 years, based on everything. Because some, particularly if you look at the data in there, there are some candidates
that
score... That there might be a single question that is scored very low for one candidate, but very high on another. So just making sure from an overall basis that there's a final score that they could at least kick in, that from an overall standpoint, a holistic standpoint, this is what the score I might give.
Well, one of the things that I'd like to do is debrief our oral panelists. Thank you very much for, you know, allocating your time. What thoughts do you have on how we can make this a better and da 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 da? Because what wonderful people we had participate, and they have some emotional investment now in what the results are. What do we normally share with them?
And I think we did that throughout the whole process.
Yes.
But we really picked their brains, both of us. That in between candidates, there was some very constructive conversation of the process of the types of things that we were doing that I took notes on. And then at the end of each day, I asked those very questions, like, what are we doing that we should be doing?
We really appreciate your time,
you
and your time
involved.
Too, Bruce. My gosh.
And I gave it up to them to send back to Kate. Give it a few days. Think about our entire process and send back your comments, your questions, your concerns on how to improve our process and get that back to us, and we'll take it into account. Okay. Right?
And I'll be sending them all a thank you, you know, on behalf of the commission. Thank you. Yeah, and remind them again. If you want to share any feedback, please feel free to do so.
But I love this idea of, it seems so obvious, I don't know why we didn't do it this way, but starting from the values of what makes a good candidate, you then construct questions that are aimed at touching each of those values. I'm curious to whether our list of 10 questions actually do touch each of those values that we...
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, one of them was eye contact, so...
Yeah, right.
I mean, I know we have things like problem solving and conflict resolution and...
strategic thinking.
Yeah, strategic thinking and problem solving. But there were some very good questions like the lieutenant brought up was, what kind of learner is this person that we didn't necessarily address in any of our questions? Mm-hmm. That is this person going to be open to a field training officer program? Are they going to be willing to learn new things? And if they, particularly for lateral candidates, if they've been policing a certain way in another agency, are they going to be open to learning the Bainbridge Island way of policing? And can you evaluate that in a question and their willingness to, and openness to a new learning process? And are they visual learners versus tactile learners? Things like that. So it was interesting. It was a very, very good conversation overall.
And is there guidance? I mean, I'm intrigued, Bruce, with your... You know, tying up, this is what we want, these are the questions, we'll pull apart this information so that we can learn that. Are there questions that we can pull that are specifically designed to reach to some of those things? Because these questions were just created by the council, the commission before, weren't they?
Mostly. I mean, some of them Rob, you know, edited or redrafted. But it seems, this is just coming out of this PST user's guide, it seems like what we really need to start with is the job description. And actually that needs, it needs reviewing anyway, because I think it's from 2007 or 2008, so I think the commission probably wants to look at that and update it anyway.
Can you do the job description, not the chief?
Right. I mean, with his input, but you approve them. And this is just from the PST book, it's a sample. Oral interview question scoring and dimensions. So basically saying, from a review of your position description, determine what character attributes your agency is looking for. You can then tie those attributes or dimensions to interview questions and apply a weighting to each question to make up a scoring matrix for the oral interview element. So they have just a chart here that shows different dimensions: communication, decision, judgment making, sensitivity, analytical problem solving, initiative, motivation, and flexibility. And then those are related to specific questions and then given different weights. So.
And instead of a single 1 to 10 standpoint, I think it was the captain that was talking about that you would assign those. Okay, question number 4, we're evaluating 1, 2, 3, 4 topics. Mm-hmm. And they are assigning a score of, say, 1 to 5 on each of those general areas of response.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get a total score for that question based on filling in that matrix.
Meaning you might value communication more than flexibility or something? You're saying you come up with different...
That you could, in a particular question, you could evaluate communication, flexibility, problem solving, and whatnot. And you would assign an individual score to each of those attributes. And based on that, well, you know, his answer, he looks like he's got great communication skills. However, he doesn't seem very flexible in understanding other people's ideas or something. So you might score him a 5 in this, but only a 1 in this, and his overall score might be a 3 then. That question.
One of the things that I'm going to do, because this is intriguing to me, is do a little bit of research on testing and how it relates to a person's character and learning ability and all that, because it occurs to me there's a huge body of scientific knowledge that we can tap into that we probably have.
Yeah, great. If you can bring some stuff to the table, that'd be fabulous.
And I'd like to go back to some of our oral panelists, because they've been doing it for 20, 30 years and making these kind of things and evaluating these things.
Yeah.
They're bringing on how to create.
Because we want good cops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, both the citizen and the police representative had a lot of, the other agency representative had a lot of experience too, didn't he? So the other thing, I feel really bad about this, but there's also in this PST guide is a whole orientation guide for board members, which would have been really useful if I'd seen it ahead of time. So I will try to bring some of this into the process the next time, because it talks about, you know, what you can and can't say, which I know I already said that, but...
Is that for the oral panelists?
Yes, so it's just a good guidance, and maybe I could provide it ahead of time, and then we could just touch on a few things in the morning.
It would be a great letter ahead of time.
Yeah.
And to kind of also, I think, prepare people for the physical space, and that there are restrooms available, and, you know, whether or not they should bring their own water, and what you're going to do for food.
Yeah, I mean, we did that part of it. I mean, they knew that they ordered their lunch, and I told them that it would be coffee and tea. But in terms of just giving a bigger overview, especially to people who haven't done it before, I think it would be in our interest to be, I'll work on that.
But, I mean, I guess one question is, when do we want to do this again? And then working backward from that, what's our schedule for revamping these things? Because there's a fair amount of legwork here that I'm hearing. I don't know if we want to talk about that now or we want to push that off.
I want to hear from the chief on whether or not he wants us to have more entry level available. Because what I'm hearing is that we're not going to get a pool for the experienced police for the laterals. And whether or not he wants to have more than, what is it?
Well, that was one topic for next meeting. We'll finish this, and then we'll talk about next meeting's topics because we have too much on the agenda for next meeting.
Yeah, probably. if you're asking me when I think we would do it again, I would say probably, you know, we want to spend some time working on the questions, and I would say maybe June. That would just be my guess because I want to spend some time on that other project that you assigned, which I haven't done anything on since we last met, so.
I understand, and I was surprised when you had said that you were going to put at least partially.
Should we just kind of plan on doing this once a quarter?
Just kind of as
a mental exercise so that we have our timelines until we get a list here that's satisfactory and positions are filled?
Yeah, it's interesting. There's so many different ways to do it. Some places do it once a year. Some do it once a month, I mean, depending on the size of the agency. I would imagine, I would hope that we could get to a point where twice a year would be sort of the way to go. But
I think we'd be able to plan that out, particularly after we look at the demographic data department that you were looking for, and kind of using that as a guidance for looking at a long-term attrition rate of the department. You can never guess the unique circumstances that may cause vacancies. But if you know you're going to get a huge turnover in retirees at a set period of time because they're all of a certain age, that may be something that we're going to need to have a longer, larger eligibility list for that particular year.
Right.
If we can get these two hired off of these two current lists and then restock it mid-year, that may take us through the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
But I think June's conceivable.
Well, I think we could. I think 60 days should be enough time to. We can put it on the shelf for 1 month.
Yeah.
Pick it up again on May 1st and shoot for having, you know, end of June be the next schedule. I think tentatively that makes sense.
And I think I'd like the idea of possibly doing the interviews on a Monday, Tuesday, and giving us a few days to work out these kinks instead of the day after.
Yeah.
Because we ran into the issue with the veterans stuff just today.
Yeah.
And while I looked at the data for the variability and the scores, and I'd like to have a little bit more time to digest some of the statistics that are buried in there.
Yeah.
Then give us a few days before and work out any of these kinks before we set our eligibility list.
We had a couple of scheduling parameters that we were working around.
Sure.
So, I absolutely agree.
Maybe you have something there.
Steve?
Yes?
Are you, we don't want to rush over you. Please speak up if you've got anything you want to add.
No, not really. I've been listening. Most of you are clear, some are not. If you're in the background, I assume.
Oh, sorry.
It's kind of difficult to listen to all the discussion, but I really have nothing to add at this point.
Okay.
And I apologize.
I think you've done a good job in putting together those eligibility lists so fast.
Thank you.
A lot of good work.
Well, I know you're at a disadvantage because you don't have the information in front of you, but I promise I will send it to you so you can see what we were looking at.
Yeah, that's fine. I got a pretty good feel from just some discussion.
Okay.
Anyway, good job.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments or observations? So it sounds like leading into the next, you know, starting in May, we want to, I guess what we're going to have to do is start with a good job description if we're going to do this comprehensively. And from the job description, you get to a list of key attributes, as talents or personality traits. And then from the personality traits, talent attributes list, we then take our questions and see how they fit that template and decide whether we need to tweak the questions, and we clearly need to add at least one, and maybe your idea is the right way to go. But I think we got to go back to the source if we're going to make sense out of this.
Mm-hmm.
So let's put that on the agenda for June, mm-hmm. or for May.
Yeah.
When's our next meeting?
Next meeting is April 13th.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk just a second about what we, at our last meeting, we threw a bunch of stuff on there because we just were anxious to get going on everything.
Yeah.
And I'm just not sure. I didn't believe it when we said it before, and I'm still not sure I do. But my notes say that we talked about several different things here for next time. We designated Kate with the chief, with Will as necessary, as a work group to work on the nuts and bolts of disqualifiers,
mm-hmm.
how to communicate those disqualifiers, how they fit in with background checking, how to break them up and rationalize them, where they fit in the process, all of that kind of tied together in a seamless web. And I'm not at all surprised that you guys haven't had a chance to get going on it because you've been working your tail off on this. We had talked about you were going to give us some kind of progress report,
right.
and my question is, and maybe that report is nothing more than a proposed methodology for approaching the problem as opposed to even in starting the problem. I don't know. You tell us what it is you think is. Do we just leave a space in the meeting for that, and whatever it is, it is? I mean, I don't.
So when I met with the chief and Will, they asked me to go back and look at how other cities handle this, about the timing and both the timing of noticing people of the disqualifiers and the content of the disqualifiers. So, and then to go back to them, and then the three of us were going to talk about any possible recommendation that we might have to the commission. I'm not sure with the chief's schedule if that will happen before the 13th, but let me find out and I can let you know next week.
Okay. So, I mean, let's just put a spot on the agenda for
mm-hmm.
checking in with you.
Yeah.
And it might be, you know, we didn't get anything done but
right.
this, and it'll, you know, but here's what we're going to do. And
right.
it might be we've begun to gather, and,
yeah.
you know, so whatever it is, it is. So
yeah.
that's item number one.
Okay.
You want to keep that ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
Item number two was we felt we wanted to see a data gather on this web of issues which were on the little draft work plan as laterals versus entry candidates,
mm-hmm.
Provisional and uses of provisional and reserve candidates, succession planning,
mm-hmm.
long-range goals, police department demographics. That was a whole kind of
mm-hmm.
web of issues that are at the root of how we do our staffing.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought that the first thing what was going to happen was we needed data.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is the relative cost of using these different types of folks?
Yeah.
And, you know, who do we have now and who will we be losing in the future and
mm-hmm.
what kind of persons do we need to plan for
mm-hmm.
having the right range of staff
right.
one,
yeah.
2, and 5 years from now? So it was kind of a data gathering process.
Yeah, so I have that data.
You think you're ready to present that
yes.
on the 13th?
I have pretty much everything I need for that.
Okay.
And then I would see that as being a conversation with the chief, right? At the meeting? I mean...
Yeah, I mean,
okay.
Hopefully the chief's got to come to that. And,
yeah.
you know, this is right at the core of his leadership, and he's got to tell us what it is he thinks about
yeah.
these things. And so that, I think, is our longest conversation.
Right.
Because the whole issue of lateral versus other lateral and long-range succession, that's the meat and potatoes.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of policy there and budget there, and, I mean, there's a lot of different things to contemplate.
And thinking about that, that's kind of the internal conversation that I've been having and Kate and I had yesterday as far as the role of the commission to try to affect those policy decisions. Like, where does our responsibility lie? Personally, I would like to say that we have a say in, or at least suggesting hiring
mm-hmm.
entries over laterals or vice versa, depending on getting the best candidate of the job. But is that in our, the way our it's currently drafted, are we allowed to go beyond the signing our eligibility lists and going that? Is it our point to lobby the council to give him more money? Is it our point to
yeah.
ask them for more money for recruiting?
I don't think that I think that, that we can certainly offer opinions. I think the chief is responsible for managing his department. And, you know, politically, to lobby for one thing or another, I don't think would be appropriate.
I mean, I was asking these very same questions a while ago, and I tried to look at the RCW to see whether it gave any guidance, and it doesn't.
No.
You can't look to our own rules for guidance, because we draft our own rules.
Yes.
And that's kind of a little tautological there. And when you think about it, the scope of our, beyond the RCWs, which we have to do, the scope of what we might do versus what the chief might do versus what the council does is entirely up to the council. Mm-hmm. If the council wants to create a police review board that's totally a new entity, they can do it. You know,
right.
The chief works for the council. So,
well, the
I guess...
Well, works for the city manager.
Right, the city manager, who in turn works for the council. But I guess my attitude is, I think the chief is open to hearing our input on these
mm-hmm.
issues. I think we all believe that it's part of a seamless whole, which is we're not just here to make sure there's no nepotism in hiring. We're here to to contribute to the quality and the consistency and
right.
the fairness of
right.
the whole process, and therefore these issues do come into it. And I would propose that we gently trod forward, and if the chief thinks we're going too far or a council member thinks we're going too far, well, then we'll negotiate as we get to that point.
Okay.
I don't know how else to do it other than organically, I guess, is what I'm saying.
No, I just want to make sure we're all on the same page on
well,
that, because I'm thinking the same thing.
And one of the things that I think makes sense, if we get into some of these issues where we're kind of struggling, is to invite one or two council members to attend.
Sure,
so that
absolutely.
So that they can take back any information that they feel is pertinent to council business. Because we are a community, we're a family, and we're all making decisions and trying to do the best we can, and we all have our roles to play, and certainly our role, you know, isn't that tightly structured.
Well, and when you come right down to it, the discussion we're going to have at some point soon, maybe even on April 13th, about laterals versus entry levels, is very much goes right to the heart of some basic budgeting issues.
Absolutely.
Do we want to invite the council to send a representative to the next meeting? I mean, now we're getting into politics, and you know, I can hear people jaws tightening.
Well, I think that's a good idea. I think that one of the things that we continue to need to do as a community is to be open,
mm-hmm.
and to share information. And you know, if one of the things, if demographically we have older police officers that are going to retire, so we need to bring in younger ones, and that's on the horizon. For council to know about it ahead of time, you know, and I don't know if that's going to be, you know, demographically a conclusion we're going to come to, but I think that inviting, you know, one or two members of council to attend would only be a good thing.
Let me answer, or I brought it up, but let me suggest that we see what tomorrow, the next time's discussion looks like.
Okay.
And as that evolves, we'll get a sense as to whether we really want to be talking about the bigger issues or not.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll decide what our outreach.
I totally trust your judgment with that, Bruce. And if you feel it appropriate to invite members from council, you know, you can send an email in your position as chair and say, this is going to be on the agenda. We, you know, would welcome your attendance and just see and just open up those lines of communication.
Yeah. I like the idea, but like, even though I put it on the table, I think it's a little early. I kind of feel like I want us to have the first conversation so that we can get a sense of what it is we feel is important that needs more work. I don't think it's going to be a one-meeting conversation.
No, I think a lot of this is going to be ongoing.
Certainly.
I think it's...
All right, so we're going to sort of delve into that whole conversation next meeting. There was another item that was on the agenda, or tentative agenda, and that was to have a presentation by Will and the chief about proposed communication policies between the commission and civil servants, what is legal and what is appropriate operationally. Now, I'm not sure I personally think that's as hot button an item as this other stuff is,
mm-hmm.
but this whole issue of, it's on my draft works plan either, this whole
right.
issue of
what's
you know,
relationship?
how much fraternizing with the civil servants is appropriate and,
mm-hmm.
and called for. And I know, Steve, you had brought up the notion that we do have a role here as an adjudicatory body, at least potentially, and there's always an issue as to whether the judges should be talking to the potential litigants and becoming friends with them. It's not necessarily a good thing. But I...
I'd be very cautious in establishing some type of relationship with parties that might appear before the commission as advocate, adversaries. I think I think the commission has to be a neutral body and not get involved in politics or take sides with
Yeah, and maybe there needs to be some formal distance because of that. Friday afternoon antics, I think. Well, I want to ask Kate whether she feels that there's something could prepare something to be said about this at this time frame, or whether we need to push that off.
And one other thing I'll add in here, we've invited the Ethics Board to do their annual presentation that has to be delivered to all committees and commissions. So they're going to be delivering about a 10-minute presentation on the city's ethics code, as well as conflict of interest topics that has to be delivered to all city committees and commissions and the council. So
do we have that on?
That is on April 13th. I know Kate's in the loop, and that just came up.
Oh, so we have the Ethics Board on here, too.
So we're going to have a pretty full agenda.
Yeah, so ideally how we run those ethics presentations before when we've gone and delivered them to other boards, we usually put them at the top because it's a quick 10-minute conversation, and then the representative from their board can leave.
Right.
And stuff. So I think if we can front-load him, we do our call to order and disclosures and minutes approval, and then have that representative do a 10-minute presentation. I think it'll actually feed quite nicely into the chief and the Will's presentation and further the conversation on this very topic. And I can...
You say on this very topic, you
because
mean?
I can... Because some of these questions about the potential... communication issues, potential conflicts of interest of us engaging with civil servants that may come before us in a judicatory matter... I can actually front-load him with those questions to address to us in his presentation. In addition to him covering the general city ethics code and the Open Public Meetings Act that he'll talk about, I can pose some of these questions or concerns that we're talking about, and then they can at least give the Ethics Board's opinion on those things as well as his traditional presentation.
That would be great.
So. All right, so we're talking about doing that next time. That's becoming... Okay, so now we have the Ethics Board leading into the whole relationship communication conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Does Will have some comments on that as well?
Don't know. I'll certainly ask him.
I mean, there's legal components to it.
Mm-hmm.
There's ethical components to it. There's also human resource management components to it. The chief may have opinions about this kind of stuff. It's kind of a little bit of a minefield, quite frankly. And I don't know what to do exactly. But
maybe it is. You know, you're saying maybe it's not such a hot button topic, but maybe it's good to do it now before, you know, who knows,
maybe
we will have an appeal. You never know.
Before it gets to be a hot topic,
And the only other thing I was going to say is my little work group update will probably be less than 5 minutes. So that will be very, very short.
All right, so we're going to do ethics leading into relationship and communication challenges. Then we're going to do nuts and bolts report on where that study's going.
Mm-hmm.
Then we're going to get into the meatier subject of data about lateral versus entry levels and other staffing issues. And then what I'd like to continue doing, and I created this, Rob and I created this evolving template of a work plan,
mm-hmm.
and I keep throwing it out there. I keep changing it and throwing it out there just to keep our eyes on some of the things
mm-hmm.
that are on the list. And I'd like to go on doing that as a vehicle for helping us plan the upcoming meetings. We don't have to ever call it finished. We just use
right.
it as an evolving tool.
Very helpful.
So if you can, because we, had, in fact, I even have on here that we had talked about getting to the amendments to the rules, at least the first cut of the amendments to the rules at the next meeting on April 27th. So we could begin to sort of, we've already begun to sort of create that agenda a little
mm-hmm.
bit.
So we're going to have two documents. We're going to have the rules, and then we're going to have the policy and procedure manual.
Yeah, probably the more of a procedures. I think the policy all lives in the rules.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's
and
the procedure manual is things like we found that, you know, giving them an hour and a half for lunch was too long, and so, you know,
yeah.
half hour for,
right.
You know, a break here.
Yeah, just
you know,
real practical.
Just all the nuts and bolts
mm-hmm.
stuff that you learn as you go, so you don't have to relearn it every
yeah.
time a new person comes in,
yeah.
you know, or a new commission comes
right.
in.
Right,
yeah.
Comes on. Okay, so I think that we know what's coming up.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a full agenda.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I would propose that when we get to that meeting that we should continue on the two-week schedule because I think we got enough on our plate. And I'm not finding it burdensome. I don't know if you guys
mm-hmm.
No. I mean, you're the one who's doing all the work. We'll just keep you running.
Okay, that's fine.
That's fine.
Yep.
I like to work. I like to work all the time. Well, and do let us know if we push you. You've
I
got
will.
So many other responsibilities, and this is a pretty flexible
And
place.
I've
I
said
will.
That to her about
yes.
15 times.
Many,
so.
Many times. So thank you. I will.
And just, I will say, just having been there these last few days, I would just like to publicly thank Kate. She has done a phenomenal job in organizing the interviews and keeping everything going and moving. I was an observer of it, and she did a fantastic job.
Thank you. That's
great.
Very nice.
That's good.
I appreciated you being there. As I mentioned, it was very helpful, so thank you.
Okay. Any other? We really don't have authority to talk about any other new business, but any other final comments on the items that were on the agenda?
No, I'm real proud of us. I think we're doing a great job.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think we're making the progress here. Steve, any other comments before we adjourn?
No, I don't. Thank you.
Okay. I guess
thanks.
We're adjourned.
All right. Thanks, Steve, for being here.